Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A Living History production.
I'm Peter Hart.
And I'm Gary Bain.
And together, we're Pete and Gary's Military History
Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to our second Ray Ellis, that's one of the Southnutt's Hussars, 107 Regiment, Royal Artillery, our second special. And Gary, you must be very excited to be joining us for this.
I am.
I feel underwhelmed, Gary.
Hey, it's really nice to be back in your home, Pete. It's a long time since we've been recording these indoors, as it were, but the restrictions have allowed it. And I've noticed you've got a rather good guitar at the side of the room. Are we going to get to hear you play that later?
No, because it's really a vanity project.
It's just an ornament.
That's what Polly calls it, yeah. In fact, she thinks of me as an ornament, I think. Something precious not to be touched.
And occasionally dusted.
Right, so where did we leave him? Well, this is in Ray's own words. We do bugger all in these podcasts, don't we? We just basically introduce excerpts from Ray Ellis. And poor old Matt McLaughlin and his highly trained team of people putting right my unprofessional mistakes.
We won't mention the microphone.
No. They stitch it all together, and I'd like to thank Matt and his editor for their patience in putting this together. But what had happened? Well, in January 1940, their training came to an end, and the Southnutt's Hussars go across the English Channel.
They're being deployed into France?
No, they're on their way to Palestine with the 1st Cavalry and only 1st Cavalry Division, and their route is to go via France to Marseille and then get the boaty thing from Marseille. When they get to Cherbourg, it's not a pleasant experience for Ray Ellis, is it?
We eventually got to Cherbourg the following day, and that I remember very well. We stood on Cherbourg docks from early morning till late at night in a most atrocious weather you could possibly imagine. It was absolutely bitterly cold. We were in field service marching order with kit bags and ammunition weighted down, and we'd stand for probably half an hour. Then they'd say, "Kit's off." And so you lay down, because it was too heavy to do, you lay down, unclip the webbing and let the thing up, and then you could sit up without the weight. You'd just get that done, then it would be, "Pack's on!" And you'd have to lie down again and clip it on and struggle to your feet and help each other to our feet. Then you'd stand a quarter of an hour and then march about 100 yards, halt, stand again, kits off, down, and this went on the whole livelong day. And everyone was perished and good. There was no food, nothing to drink at all. In the evening time, we'd been there hours and hours and hours. We were wet through with cold. And then they gave us all a tin of McConaughey's, meat and vegetable. And that was the ration for the day. That was it. But nothing to open the tins with. We were trying to open these tins and eat this cold meat, and it was atrocious, a terrible thing.
It's funny, isn't it? Because McConaughey's was a staple of the First World War as well, or the Great War, as we call it.
Yeah, it was. Now, people say it was horrible, but it's just lamb and vegetables. And if it's cold, it's horrible.
Food's horrible cold, isn't it?
Yeah, let's face it. It is. Anyway, their train was unheated. They were packed in like sardines. You must have travelled on a train in your army days. All the kit pack piled up on the racks. And it was 3 days and nights. 3 days and nights, Gary, to get across France.
You'll be surprised to know, Pete, that I've also travelled on trains during the civilian times of my life.
You've lived.
I have lived. I work for Transport for Land. I scan trains all the time.
Oh, I wish I'd been on a train.
Yeah.
Anyway, Ray's not in a good state, is he? What do you think's wrong with him?
Well, for one thing, he collapses with influenza, I think.
Oh, when he gets to Marseille.
By this time, I was coughing up blood, which worried me because I thought it was, well, actually, I'd burst a capillary in my throat. It was nothing, really, but it was a bit dismaying in those conditions and cough. I felt really ill. And then it was a matter of getting on board the Devonshire, but by this time, I was a stretcher case. I was really ill. I'd almost collapsed. And so they carried me off the train on a stretcher. And so I lay on a stretcher shivering on the quayside at Marseille, and eventually I was carried aboard the Devonshire. And I can remember saying to somebody, I expected to come back on a stretcher. I expected to go on one.
Blimey. Coughing up blood, eh, Gary?
Yeah, he was, he was known as Lucky Ray after that.
I do like that quote. I expected to come back on a stretcher. Well, I didn't expect to go out on one. That's a lovely quote. Now, so Lucky Ray Ellis, like a gunner, sorry to give him his full title. He recovers. They're on His Majesty's troop ship Devonshire, and they sail all the way across the Mediterranean, Gary. And the weather's quite nice. And then one of the lads gets meningitis. Well, brilliant. So when they get there, they go into quarantine. But then they move into Sarafand camp, which is in Palestine.
If you saved a tin of flies, a cigarette tin, 50 cigarette tin, you were allowed to go to the cinema free. Instead of taking money, you took a tin of flies and they tipped these out and gave you a ticket to go in. That was to encourage you to swap them. It was very easy to get a tin of flies. You just sat there doing this for half an hour and there were so many.
I wish I could pay to go to the cinema with flies.
Well, if it was fleas, there might be a chance, Gary.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. You do have your own personal collection.
I just booked Fred in at the door.
That's right. What a lovely doggy he is. And they move from Sarafan to Gadira. And by this time, Ray's becoming a bit more aware of surroundings. And also, he becomes aware that the British aren't necessarily popular.
You could sense a lot of it, the hostility in their looks and so on. I remember one afternoon walking along a street somewhere round about Gadira, I think, and passing two Jewish young ladies, and I said good afternoon to them, and they spat at us, spat in my face. And that was rather a shock, because I'd always been up to believe that everyone thought the British were marvellous people,
What do you think of that?
Well, that's quite interesting, because I had a sort of similar thoughts when I was very young in Germany. I was sort of 18, 19 years old. It never occurred to me that some of the local population might not like us, but some of them didn't.
Never. Can't believe it. Now, what do you think they're doing? What were they doing? Are they on active service in Palestine? I suppose they are in a way, but what are they really doing?
Well, they're doing lots of drill and they're practicing dropping into action. By dropping into action, that's getting the guns ready and ready to fire. But they're also doing some nice things. Hadira camp.
They moved to Hadira, right.
Yeah, it had a very nice coastline.
Sea.
And they were swimming and bathing in the sea and all the sort of things that soldiers would get up to, given the opportunity.
Now, the next quote does remind me of you. On the 15th of April, 1940, they're inspected by General Sir Archibald Wavell, the general officer commanding Palestine.
He walked along the line as generals do and picked up some odd man to speak to, and he stopped in front of me and said, do you feel ready to go out and meet the enemy? To which I replied, yes, sir, good man, he said, and walked on. That was my spectrum. And I think had Hitler known that I was ready to go and meet the enemy, the Third Reich would have trembled.
Now, that quote does have a touch of you about it.
Well, I think it's got a touch of Baldrick about it, isn't it? They'd have been terrified if they knew I was ready for it. It has a sort of resonance with it. Typical British Tommy, isn't it?
It is. It's that classic. And Ray Ellis is quite good at telling a story. Well, that's why we picked him. They then go for a firing camp at Aslow. So what's a firing camp, do you think? Practicing making fires?
Yeah, I think the clue is in the name, but seeing as they've got big bangy things, it's probably practicing firing the guns, Pete.
Is it a nice, lovely, sort of lovely country environment?
Well, no, I think one of the problems there is regular sandstorms.
It's a desert, isn't it?
It's a desert. It's not very pleasant, and there's some other unpleasantness while they're there, isn't there?
Oh, well, this is the death of Gunner Bob Paulson, who from appendicitis. You may remember this from the book and from other things. The medical officer, whose name was Finnegan, he's not a particularly caring medical officer, but then you have a perspective on this, don't you? It's difficult to tell.
Yeah, and it doesn't mean he isn't caring, but his role basically was to get people back on duty, which he did to the best of his ability.
Now, the lads sort of preferred their medical orderly, Harry Day, but that's because his job is more TLC end of life and not getting them back to duty quite so vigorously. Anyway, this is the story of Gunner Bob Paulson. It's quite long and it's quite sad.
Bob Paulson, he was in a little bivouac tent and he developed this illness, which Harry Day knew he got appendicitis, but the doctor wouldn't say so. He said he'd just got stomach ache or something. And I can remember we'd go out on range and come back and see poor old Bob there, writhing in pain. He was just lying on the floor in this stinking little tent in the desert, and he was in absolute agony, and sweat was pouring off him. But still the doctor wouldn't do anything about it until in the end he had to realise that he was seriously ill. But by this time, Bob had been doing this for about 3 days. He'd been in a really terrible state. And so he was sent away, but he had to be sent away to Jerusalem, I think he was sent to. But this must have been 200 or 300 miles away. The outcome of it was he had peritonitis, he burst appendicitis, and he died. I was being one of his closest friend was sent as one of the burial party. And we set off across the desert to follow the same track that poor old Bob had made on his last journey. And it was an appalling journey. It was so bad, the bouncing in the back of this 1,500 weight, that I went up and hit my head on the stanchions that come across to hold the canvas in place. And my nose was pouring with blood and dust and sand. And I thought, poor old Bob, coming along a thing like this with a burst appendix. We saw the sister at the hospital who said that she'd never known anyone fight so hard for his life as this lad. But he died. We buried him in Ramley Cemetery. And we had a burial party from the Hampshire Regiment, I can remember, who fired the shot, and we carried him and put him there, and poor old Bob remains there, and he shouldn't have died. Without any hesitation at all, I'd say that, yes, I'd put that to death at his door, definitely. He shouldn't have died. It shouldn't have been necessary to have kept him in those conditions. He didn't get the proper attention. I feel very bitter about it all these years afterwards. Had he lived, no doubt he'd have been killed anyway. Really, everybody was, but at some stage, probably. But that's beside the point. He shouldn't have died of appendicitis in the Sinai Desert. Should have been sent to hospital straight away. When Bob died, I was upset. He was my closest friend. And, yes, I sobbed. He was the first to go. And it really hit me.
So what do you think of that?
Well, I remember this from when we did the South Not Cesar's podcast. And, you know, the thought of that poor bastard, excuse the phrase, in that truck with appendicitis. I mean, Ray Ellis smashes his head bouncing about. I just think the poor man must have been in absolute agony.
Oh yeah, it's chastening. It's just awful. Poor sod.
There's also the fact that, you know, he's sort of quite sanguine about it, in that he says his friend Paulson shouldn't have died in that way, but, you know, he'd have probably died anyway, which is a really odd point of view. Unless you're in a sort of wartime environment when it's probably perfectly natural.
Now, on the brighter side, the next story, and it's the juxtaposition which sums up military life. One minute there's tragedy, and next minute they're all having a good laugh. And the next story is about the food, which got better in Palestine. And this is probably the funniest story that was ever told to me in all my time as an oral historian.
The food definitely did improve in part, particularly at Hadera. It was pretty good. And the conditions we ate under were better. We had a better mess tent, and we sat at trestle tables, and the food generally was better. I think the presentation was better. The presentation was better. For instance, if a soup or a stew type of meal was being served, it was served in some sort of more civilised manner. It wasn't scooped up by some dirty man in a dirty mug and dropped on a cold plate. There was a more sort of civilised way of going about it. It was still a bit rough, but much improved to what it was. We used to have a little story about our cooks, which may I tell you this story, because the language is rather right. The story we used to tell was to say, we have a fantastic cook in the troop at the moment. He's a classical scholar. In fact, he has a Latin motto. Really? What's that? Fuck 'em, give 'em stew.
What do you think of that then, Gary?
Well, I don't think it's Latin. I think it's quite French, actually, isn't it? But,
fuck 'em, give 'em stew. Love it. Absolutely love it.
But it does make a difference. If you get a good cook, if you get good food, it does make a real difference. And I never, ever had any complaints about food in the army. And you know, I think that they gave you as good food as anywhere.
And you were a growing lad.
I was a growing lad. Unfortunately, I didn't stop.
Now, they're soon, they're only there for about 5 or 6 months. And then in late June 1940, the Italians have come into the war and they move up to Egypt. There's the classic going into action story from Ray.
We're quite thrilled about this because we knew we were going into action and this was good. And I remember getting some chalk and I remember writing across the name, Mussolini, here we come. The great men were arriving. How green we were. But that was it. So there was a feeling of no fear, exhilaration. At last we were going into action. We were really going to show these Italians what was what. The South Nazis were coming. This was, I suppose, typical of many young units going into action for the first time.
Do you think they knew what was happening? Do you think the Italians would have feared them?
No, I mean, there's a sense of bravado, isn't there, that's engendered amongst a group. So it's perfectly natural to be full of it, as it were. And they were, because at that point they hadn't experienced some of the things that they later experienced.
Well, there's an early clue for Ray Ellis, because they're going to Mersa Matruh, which they get to in June, and they're in positions outside the it's a sort of holiday resort in some ways, and so it's not far from Alex. And Ray's sent back with a truck to the town to pick up supplies. And then the most terrible thing happens for Ray.
And I heard a screaming sound, and the next thing, there was this vicious explosion, and I held myself to the ground. Of course, what it was a stick of bombs falling. But I didn't know at the time it was a stick of bombs. And I hadn't heard any aircraft, and there'd been no air raid warning or anything. And so there was this devastating flashing and crashing and blast. And I was absolutely bewildered. And then it went quiet. And then there was another scream. And a man came out of the street, a soldier he was, came out of the tree. And he was screaming. And I can remember he was holding his guts in, and all his stomach had been torn open, and all his entrails were trickling through his fingers, and he was screaming, and then he sank to his knees, and his screaming changed to a sort of gurgle, and he just sort of, you know, dropped almost at my feet, and I was absolutely appalled. It was so new and so strange, and the noise of it, and he was screaming, and then his scream changed to a gurgle, and his guts were all done, his entrails were straining through his fingers. It was an awful sight. I've often thought of this poor man, and because he was the first man I saw die.
Now that's not funny by any account, is it?
No. And, you know, there but for the grace of God in Ray Ellis's case, because it's, you know, it's just a matter of where these things land. And it was terrifying.
And he has a close shave himself not long after, doesn't he?
He does.
And the bombs came screaming down so fast that I didn't have time even to lie flat or get in a slit change. I went into a crouched position and froze there. And bomb after bomb after bomb after bomb came down onto this dump and absolutely destroyed it. All the time I was saying to myself, I shan't feel anything, I shan't feel anything, I shan't feel anything. I remember saying this at the time. When the raid was over, I was still crouching, petrified, really. And the whole dump had been destroyed. Everything had been blown to smithereens. At the end of it, I had no wounds, no blast, nothing. I was completely unscathed. It was the most amazing thing.
Again, that's lucky.
Lucky.
I mean we joke about him being lucky Ray, but this guy, things happen to him occasionally, things go wrong. But he is, throughout his career in the army, he survives a lot of things.
Yeah, and to come through unscathed, in that quote, he himself says, it's a miraculous escape. And he's right.
Now, they were digging a set of gun pits around part of the defensive positions. And then, again, we've got a juxtaposition of stories. We've just had the bombing. We've had this horrible death of someone. And then we've got a great humorous story.
We used to keep beer. We used to get beer there. And we used to keep beer in the gun barrel to keep it cool. And so you'd close the breech and then drop them down. I remember once we had a general officer come to examine the position. And by this time, we were all black, because we worked naked virtually, just a pair of shorts. That's all we wore for months. And he said to someone, is it wise to have native troops so near the front? And the colonel said, and he said, you must apologise. I do apologise. So we must have looked like Arabs or something. And this same general, having said this, yes, went to the gun and opened the breech, and then clonk, clonk, clonk out came bottles of beer, and they slid down the breech and dropped onto the ground. Yeah, he just looked around and closed the breech silently and said nothing. Very typical. Nothing was said. He'd called us native troops, so he owed us that, didn't he?
Yeah, you can imagine that, can't you? Just opening up and the bottles falling out, yeah. On another day, he'd have probably had them all on a charge, but he couldn't really do that, could he?
He'd call them native troops. Now, into the modern eye, this all looks a bit dodgy, but we've got to remember this is the context of the time, and that would be an insult in the context of the time. Now, what's it like at Mersa Matruh? How would you describe it? Is it a balmy seaside resort?
Well, no, I mean, they're really unpleasant conditions. They're hot, sticky, as mentioned earlier. You know, there's sand. What does sand do? It gets into things, doesn't it? Particularly crevices.
Ray's got another story, hasn't he? I can tell from what you're lining him up.
And again, you know, we haven't mentioned this, but his brother's there as well. And this is a story that involves his brother.
Hair was a great problem because you sweat, obviously. And your hair becomes greasy with natural sweat. And then the sun blows, gets into your hair, and it mats it. That's terrible. And you can't get a comb through it. And my brother said, after we've been there a reasonably short time, he said, I think the best thing we could do is cut off our hair altogether. Cut the whole lot off. So we discussed this and thought this was a good idea. So I sat on a petrol tin, and George cut off all my hair. And then when he saw what it looked like, everyone changed their mind. And I was the only one with all his hair cut off.
I love the idea he's cut off his hair off.
And he's the only one.
He's got his hair off.
I can imagine they all went round. Morning, Ray.
This time, he comes off the guns for a while. He's trained as an observation post specialist assistant, which means he's closely assigned to Major Peter Birkin. And he's promoted to Lance Bombardier. Ray Ellis, which is a bit like Lance Corporal, your own distinguished rank. That's about October 1940. And he's actually acting as OP assistant to Birkin, Peter Birkin, with a composite battery, which is formed. You'll find more about this in our podcast.
And
about
your book.
And the book, of course. During Operation Compass, they're attacking the Italian camps. The Italians have advanced into Egypt, and they stop and dig in and build camps, and they're attacking them in December 1940. Now, the Italians don't do terribly well. They've got bad equipment, and they're attacked in a surprise attack. And the South Nazis are involved in it. Now, Ray Ellis isn't particularly involved, but he does see them the surrender of the Italians.
They came streaming out in thousands. Thousands! It was the most amazing sight. From all these camps, there were thousands of them. There were so many that there weren't enough infantrymen to look after them. They started to build sort of quick dunnet wire prison compounds where you quite close, you know, just to wire them in. Somebody was having to do a tremendous amount of organisation, as you imagine, to feed them, look after them. There were so many of them that eventually I was given the job of taking, must have been 100 men I'd got, and all I got was a rifle. But there's no danger, they'd just given themselves up. They're just slouching along, demoralised, really. I couldn't speak to them because I couldn't speak Italian then. First time I'd ever seen any enemy. And I just got this great column of men, and then I was told, you march them down, we're building something, take them down there and you'll find somewhere to hand them over. And so I just marched in front of these 100 men or just to the side, and they just came docilely along in a long column. Most amazing thing. Eventually I was able to hand them over, and they all filed into a barbed wire compound.
So that's quite a thing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, he's then promoted. Once you start getting promoted in the army, you often find yourself promoted quickly, time after time. Was that your experience in the army?
Time after time, but there was some things in between, unfortunately.
Are they demotions?
Yeah, one or two.
Anyway, he's promoted shortly after to bombardier. Oh, full bombardier. And they're in the Suez Canal area. They're watching for mines dropped in the canal. They've moved out there. But this is a last story for today. And again, it's a funny story. And there's quite a lot of upsetting things in these things. So it's nice to finish with a funny story.
I did manage to get into Suez one day. I went with Bob Foles. We got there to see two men walking up the road, dragging a third man by his ankles with his head in the gutter. And I remember saying to him, this is disgusting. This is just the type of thing that gets the British Army a bad name abroad. Absolutely paralytic, the three of them. One was so drunk he couldn't walk. And while we were looking with disgust at these three soldiers, I realised that one was Fred Lamb. And the other was Wag Harris. I said to Bob, that's Fred and Wag. The other one must be my brother, the one with his head in the gutter. And so, of course, it was. And so these disgraceful British soldiers were really my best pals, my brother.
Now, that story must resonate with you, Gary, from both your personal character and your friends.
Well, no, my brother doesn't drink very much.
Your friends?
Oh, my friends don't drink very much either, but you do.
That's not true. But it's a lovely idea, isn't it?
It is, yeah. You can imagine it, can't you?
Look at that. Look at that. He's disgraced the British Army.
Oh.
It's my brother. And my best mate. Yeah. Oh, fabulous. Well, that's it for today from Ray Ellis. There'll be another special in a month or so. And I hope you enjoy it. It's wonderful hearing his voice, isn't it?
It is. And to hear him telling it in his own words.
And as ever, we pay tribute to the War Museum, who paid for all the interviews to be done. It's nothing to do with me, really. I was a paid employee. And if you want to listen to the full interview, type in Ray Ellis and IWM, and it'll come out on their website. You've got about 25 hours of it you can listen to. Anyway, cheers, Gary.
Thanks, Pete.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at oseamalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Thanks for listening. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook to learn more about each episode. And if you'd like to support the podcast, you have a couple of options. You can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/PGMH, or consider subscribing to the podcast for only £2 per month and get ad-free listening and bonus content. You can find links for both on our Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Sounds great, doesn't it?